You are now tuning in to the Own the Build podcast. Join C-Link's very own Paul Hemming, where each week he interviews experts from the world of construction and asks all the important questions around intelligent construction management.
Hello and welcome to episode 156 of the Own the Build podcast with me, Paul Hemming. Today, I am sharing again our guide to tackling the quantity surveying shortage in the UK. There are between 5 and 10,000 QS vacancies currently, and that has been going on for quite some time. The RICS found that over 50% of construction companies are struggling with this fact, and the ebook that I actually myself wrote, quite sadly, talks to you about how best to tackle that QS shortage if you are a contractor. It's in the show notes. You can go and download it right now. On to today's show, and in the studio, I am joined by William Templey, Managing Director at Fortis Foundations, Civil Engineering and Piling Specialist, serving the rail, civils, energy, residential and water sectors, and I'm sure much, much more. Today, I'm actually really genuinely excited to have this conversation. We're focusing on company culture and much, much more, and this couldn't be more important in the context of today's blue and white collar labour shortage, as per the ebook that I just mentioned. I can't wait to talk to Will. So without further ado, Will, welcome to the show, mate. How's it going?
It's great, thank you. Thank you for having me. Looking forward to it.
Pleasure is all mine. Is it, I've just started shortening your name there. Is it, are you happy for me to call you Will, or do you prefer William?
Yes, no, Will. Will's great.
Will. We'll roll with Will then. Good. It'd be embarrassing if you said no, it must be William now. And I started to show off with a terrible, terrible beginning. But great to have you on the show, Will. Like I said, the conversations that we had in prep for this recording in the studio were conversations that genuinely, genuinely interested me. I'm really looking forward to exploring them with you. Before we jump into it, just give us a brief overview of your experience and your construction journey to date.
Yeah, so I started many years ago as a man on the shovel, working for a civil engineering and rail company, back then, working my way through college, paying my bills. And then after I finished university the first time round, I moved into teaching, fell out of love with it. And then my old boss came back to me and said, look, why don't you come work for me full time? I said, I don't really fancy digging holes again after being in the classroom. And he said, no, I want you to come on board, join me, be one of my senior team. But obviously, you've got to go back to university first and train up. So I went back to university, done a HNC, HND in civil engineering, then moved on to a construction management and project management degree at university whilst working through the ranks at my company. So I went from just a labourer to a site engineer to a site manager to a project manager, and then worked my way up to senior project management, and then from there. So that company then folded. I went into another company who were a larger company, turnover 300 million in the construction and rail industry. Worked for them for 3 years as a senior PM as well, overseeing Anglia rail region, undertaking lots of civil engineering, rail, piling. Again, heavy industry civils, and then built my own company in the background, ready to make my own move once I saw the opportunity.
And Fortis Foundations is you now. I tried to give a brief overview. Just tell us exactly what it is you guys do.
So we are a civil engineering and piling company. So we undertake all groundworks, civil works, piling, engineering, platforms, bases. Yeah, the extent civil engineering is very similar to construction, but obviously construction, you think of building and homes, where civil engineering opens up to the masses on what we can and can't do.
Absolutely. Excellent. So you and I had similar introductions, if you like, into the industry, in that you did day release or part-time qualification alongside working and growing up in the industry. That's exactly what I did. It's not easy, that, and I've got a lot of respect for people who did it, because I did it myself, and it does take up a lot of time. The thing that really interested me most, I guess, when we started talking, or which sparked something in my mind, honestly, Will, when we first started chatting, was the fact that when we first spoke, you talked to me about your dissertation and the fact that it was on incentive schemes used by managers to motivate employees. And I have to say, I didn't expect you to tell me that that was what your dissertation would have been about. Don't ask me why. It just took me by surprise when you said that's what you wrote about. And, you know, you talked a lot about culture. Can I ask, going back all those years to that moment when you thought, this is what I'm going to write my dissertation about. When I think about my own dissertation, I know what inspired me. What was it that inspired you?
It was obviously a number of elements, but mostly from the teams I was working with. There was a lot of conversations on site, and everyone had their own opinion on what they wanted and how they felt about how they're being treated by the company. Some were upset by the way they were treated. Some were happy with where they were, but there was no sort of general consensus of where everyone was sitting. Everyone was so different, and trying to understand, because as their boss, I was trying to think, you know, how can I get the best out of my guys? And people were talking about, it's trying to get everyone on that same path, that same mindset, so we all pull together in the same direction. But no two people are the same, and understanding one person's needs won't meet the needs of the second person. So I really want to understand, if I want to understand my workforce, what is the best way to sort of get around them and get them together so we can, like I said, pull forward as a team and be successful.
And so why was it, when you think back to it, that some of them were, in your own words, upset with the company?
And again, it all comes down to personal feelings. I mean, no two people the same per day. Maslow's hierarchy of needs, obviously everyone's got certain levels of criteria they need to fulfill before they can move on to the next one. So if someone comes home from work or in from work in that morning had a row with the wife, they're not going to be performing anyway. So it's straight away, you've got to understand the needs of your men on a daily basis. You've got to understand what makes them tick, how they work, the individual psychology of each person. So understanding your team is critical in the first instances. And then once you know your team, and you know each other, you can then start to build a what motivates each person. Because no two people, like we said, are motivated the same. So whether it be financial, whether it be sort of intrinsic, extrinsic, there's so many different levels of motivation in terms of what can be offered or what they need to be inspired.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And so talk me through kind of, and I'm probably winding back the clocks here, mate, so bear with me, but talk me through kind of what your conclusions were from that dissertation, you know, going back to the question, the incentive schemes used by managers to motivate employees. What is it that you found that you now use in your business?
So obviously the initial one everyone thinks of is money. You know, more money means you're going to get a better service and people are going to drive, but that's not always the case. I mean, for our guys, when I was working, it was, you're paid a salary to do that job. Why should I pay you more to do your job when you've, you know, so making sure you've come on at the right, you know, the right pay grade for yourself, not underselling yourself, making sure you've come on at the right pay for the right job, knowing your worth. I think that took me many years to realize one's own worth. And when you do, obviously, it's a big game
personally
changer.
Personally, you mean?
Yes, yeah, personally, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Although I was given a lot of opportunities in my career and built it through training, I also believe I was held back quite a bit to stop me going further or even leaving the company. I think I was held back to keep me within the ranks.
And when you say held back, do you mean held back financially by the company, held back professionally? Like, what was it that you felt held you back?
Professionally, I believe I was professionally held back. We were going into sort of management meetings, senior management meetings, where I was putting the structure down to my directors, telling them what we should be doing, where should we be going. I built the pay structure, I built the organizational chart for the business, where we needed men, where we needed to put our attentions. So it was a bit of a tail wagging the dog in terms of where I was sat. But because of my boss, the way he was, I was very grateful for my job and didn't want to look a gift horse in the mouth. I always felt that I needed that job and I needed him, so I didn't want to upset the hierarchy.
Is that also because of, like, it sounded like quite a unique initial relationship where this person brought you into the company, put you through part-time education, et cetera, et cetera. Like, felt like they invested quite a lot of money in you personally, or time and effort in you personally. Is that why you felt the bond and the personal worth issue came from there, do you think?
Yes, I did, and still do feel very indebted to that person for, you know, for what they did for me. They saw something in me, allowed me to adventure into that and get the qualifications and the knowledge and experience that I've gained over the years. So I've always felt indebted for that. But at the same time, you sort of look back and think, well, Altar, I think you could have given me more opportunity there. Now I know the sort of process and where I should have been. It's hard. And I know when I got to a point, there was sort of a turning point in my career where myself and another guy in the same position got to senior project manager, and we'd been there for some time. And I said, you know, I'm going to go in and ask for a pay rise here. He said, really? I said, yeah, I'm going to go in and ask for a pay rise.
So, you know, always difficult.
Yeah. You know, I'm worth it. You know, I do X amount and I bring in this amount of business, and, you know, I'm very successful. We do most of the work here. So I went in and said, you know, laid my cards on the table. So this is where I am, and this is what I think I deserve. And he said, if it's that or the door, then you can take the door. So it completely shook me down in flames in 30 seconds flat. So I walked out and he said, how did that go? I said, well, put it this way, I've not got a pay rise. I think I'm lucky to still have a job. Yeah.
So yeah. There's a couple of things that make me wonder there, because I could tell you a similar experience of, you know, I had a boss that was just piling and piling and piling work on me and giving me more and more responsibility. And I remember going in once and saying, look, it's time to give me a pay rise because I'm now doing X, Y, and Z, and I know what I should be getting paid. And he basically looked at me and said, yeah, you're good, but you are still young, so not now, and off on your way, right? Which is, and I remember thinking at the time, like, is it me? Did I manage that poorly? But I remember feeling like I was getting absolutely schooled by my boss, yeah, because I was doing so much in a very similar way to what you're explaining, obviously totally different environments, but really delivering and getting nowhere and feeling like it was completely out of my control. When you reflect on that and thinking about like your business now, Will, and this, it's not easy question, I guess, but is the fact that you were even, you and I in those different situations had to go in and ask for that pay rise, does that tell you in itself that there's something fundamentally wrong with the way those relationships were working at that time, do you think?
I mean, the man himself is a very hard man, won't give anything easily or willingly. And I think, yeah, you're always kept at the lower end of the spectrum. You can never quite hit the higher ranks. Always held back, I think, which is something I look to avoid with my team, and to make sure that everyone's paid at the right level for what they're doing. But it's very important that the team members themselves know the level they're at and understand that there's a pay limit to every position that you can hold. I mean, you can be the best digger in the world, but that digging a hole with a shovel will only warrant a certain wage. I can't pay you double the amount because I don't get it back. There's a limit to most job roles. So if you can't aspire to go to the next stage and then become like a site manager or site foreman, then unfortunately there isn't that progression. And some people will never progress. Some people will. Some people want to. Some people don't. So it's just understanding the individual and what they can achieve.
We actually had a very interesting conversation with a quantity surveying recruiter a few months ago now. And one of the things that he said that many, many companies don't do is have salary bandings or actual clear definition between role A, role B, role C, and like where you can go. And you can, it's almost, they don't paint that path. And if they did paint that path, it would make the employee see what they can do. Lots and lots of people, almost everyone is aspirational, right, for where they want to get to. So if you're painting that path of, look, you're at A right now, I'd love you to be at D. And if you're at D, you'll go through a pay rise at B, C, and then get to D. And that's kind of like how we see it. And he was saying, if you can just paint that picture, A, you'll get much more motivation. But B, your employees have a lot more clarity on expectations and kind of like how that pathway. So that was a really powerful way to do it. Just going back to your point though, Will, and just sticking with your dissertation here, and then this boss who clearly you have a lot of respect and admiration for, but clearly you feel maybe there's a bit of a disparity between what you were valued at financially versus what you should have been. And that sits with me comfortably, because I feel like I was in a very similar position at one point as well, right? How could that individual motivated you differently so that you didn't leave that company?
For me, it was progression. For me to stay motivated, I need to be progressing in the role I was in. I progressed over the last 7-8 years through the benefit of college and university, my understanding on site, my responsibilities, they were always growing. And I hit the ceiling there where I knew I could go further. And I believe he did too. But it was hard that the board of directors there that were undertaking it, I think he was governed by them somewhat. And at the same time, the structure in which the company was built was very much at the handshake and the deal you got at the time you came on board. So it was very hard to try and put a system in place where everyone would be equal or having so much. It would have been chaos. Then everyone would have been uproar. Well, hold tight, I've got this and I've got that, so I should be worth X. And it would have, yeah, it would have caused absolute chaos within the industry or the company. So I think, yeah, it was very hard for them to put that into monetary values. But for myself, yeah, I wanted to progress. And then I was held back, I believe.
And so turning to the point that the recruiter that I spoke to made about painting that pathway of how you can get more money, go up the chain effectively, does that ring true for you in terms of your own experience at that moment? It was about where you could go and you felt like you couldn't go any further.
Yeah, and I think that it ties back in with my dissertation, open communication, progression, those sort of elements and understanding of where you are, training and qualification. They're big motivators, and you might take a pay cut knowing that you're going to be, you know, one step back now, but in the future, in 2 years, 3 years time, when you've got that qualification, that ticket, that experience, you're going to excel forward three steps faster. And myself, yeah, the university was done, the learning was done, the education was there, but the progression opportunity wasn't. And at that time, I should have known my worth, I think, and then should have been my time to move on. But I wasn't. I'd been there for 17 years. So I wasn't comfortable with change at that point. So very much dreaded change and feared that I had to stick with that. Otherwise, I didn't know anything else.
And just on that point, because there'll be loads of people listening who feel exactly the same. And that not even is the combination of the worth and the change, right? How do you feel having, as soon as you made that change, how did you feel?
Once I left, it was scary, very, very scary at the first point. For the first few days, but then it's the same with grief, and I suppose once you learn to accept that change and you know it's coming, you accept it, and then you start looking towards the positives. I think it's very easy to get dragged in and all the negatives that come in straight away. But yeah, it's looking forward to the positives, and it's same with setting up your own business. There's a million reasons why you probably shouldn't, and issues that are going to come into it, but if you focus on them, you won't go anywhere. So it's very much being forward thinking and understanding the rewards and the benefits of where you're going rather than the negative. The negatives are always going to happen. They're always going to be there. It's just up to your mindset and how you look at them.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. With my own experience setting my own business, if you thought about it for too long, you'd be hesitant to do it. But once you have done it, the change that it has on your psyche and your outlook generally on life is astounding. So I would 100% recommend that. We have barely even touched the sides of what I wanted to talk about with you so far, Will, but it's fascinating stuff. in the second half of the show, what I want to talk about is rugby. I've definitely got some people's attention there, and rugby and how, like, the culture of team building that you've experienced with rugby has then impacted how you run your business, because it leads in nicely from the dissertation. But we will do that right after this break, Will. Right now, there are between 5 and 10,000 QS vacancies in the UK. Loads of main contractors that we speak to are struggling to recruit and find QSs, and also struggling to recruit and find high-quality subcontractors, given the skills shortage. Having worked as a QS for many years, I've seen firsthand the challenges of managing subcontract procurement, and I understand that many projects will fail by getting procurement wrong. This is why we built C-Link. With C-Link, you will build resilience. You'll centralize your supply chain data, automate procurement, and access digital contracts to present yourself as a world-class contractor. To find out more, you can now go to the show notes, and you will see that we have included a video and a demo link so that you can meet either me or meet the team and understand better what we do. I look forward to speaking to you all. Thank you very much. So, for certain listeners, the prospect of talking about rugby will have made them thoroughly excited to start this second half. There might be a portion of people who think, oh, bloody hell, I'm not sure if I do want to listen about rugby in the second half, but bear with us. We will tie it all back to construction. And I'm particularly excited to have this part of the conversation. So we've talked about incentive schemes. We've talked about employee motivation. And we've touched on culture, Will. Now, you are someone who has played a lot of rugby, been involved in a lot of the team building around rugby. And you said to me that you almost use the same principles that you have in building a rugby team's ethos and, you know, motivation as you do with your company. Talk to me about how on earth you do that.
Well, I see the two very similar. Building a team, any company is only good as its employees. So without a team, you haven't really got a business. So when you look, it's the same thing whether you, in a rugby team, you know, begin the season, you sit there and you set out what your objectives are, your aims, your vision, how we're going to get there, where we want to be, who we need in the team. You know, the best teams only have the best players, only have the most skillful players, to make sure we're doing the right training, the right diet, etc. So the whole ethos of building that team and achieving your goals is very much the same as in business. You know, we share the company vision. We want to be the best pilot company there is, and we want to be quality driven, right first time. We always deliver. So the goals and visions are the same. The team building as well, the camaraderie amongst teams is key. Like I said before, the company I built for another person and was built purely from rugby players and our teammates. No one can dig better than a rugby player. No one's got.
Is that a fact?
Well, honestly, yeah, I've tested many people. They're strong. They don't give up. They're determined.
Who are better, the backs or the forwards?
Well, yes, I should have said that. I suppose a forward. The backs don't like getting dirty, so that's.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah, there's piano pushers and piano players. Yeah, so the team we built was built around rugby players and our friends at the local rugby club. You know, when you're in a hole, you're digging, it's dark, it's wet, you all pull together, you've all been, same on the rugby field, you're out there in the wet, mud, the raining, and you've got to achieve that goal. That winning is key. And it's the same when you're on a project, you know, getting to that deadline and achieving your goals is key. And the guys pull together, we've got the same ethos, we all buy in, we're all friends. And so it goes a lot easier, a lot smoother.
Yeah, that makes sense. And the interesting thing that you said, I guess, at the start there was it's the start of the season. We will set out at the start of the season our objectives, our aims, our visions. You know, it might be we want to win the cup. We want to finish in the top half of the league. We want to win the league, whatever it is. You set out those aims, objectives, and then you start thinking about like the how are we going to do it. You know, you talked about nutrition, training, etc. In your experience, and bringing it back to construction companies now, because I'm reflecting on what you said there with my own experience. I'm interested to hear yours. With contracting companies, do you feel like there is always a culture set around objectives, aims, and visions? You know, like our vision for this year is X. Have you felt that in the same way that you feel it at the start of a rugby season?
So within our company, yes. I think we strive. Communication is a great big motivator. If the guys don't know what they're doing, then there's lack of direction, there's lack of clarity, and it leaves a lot of questions in everyone's mind, you know, what are we doing, where are we going, why are we doing this? So we're very clear on our objectives for the year. We'll have a management meeting where we set down what we want to achieve, where we want to be. This year we've brought in solar, so we've brought in a new guy to run the solar. His objective, what he needs to do within that, to how to build that, and then the team below. But we disseminate all the information to our teams below to make sure we're all aware of what we're doing, where we're going, why, how.
But how do you do that, Will? Like in terms of, so start the rugby season, you get the team around, you explain like what your goals and ambitions and how you're going to do that. How do you actually do it as a construction company? Like how do you engage your team so that they know what your objectives and your vision are?
I mean, so it's done segmented. Like I said, we had the managers' meetings and we have day meetings and we have team building events and we discuss what we're doing, how we're doing it. But when we bring on individuals in the induction is always done by myself. So I've got a clear understanding of who they are, why they're joining us. And then I make sure they understand who I am, where I want to go, what our company's doing, and how we're going to get there. So it's very clear and precise on the inductions of how we're going to achieve and what we're going to achieve. And then it's understanding that individual's needs and requirements to ensure they're going to be right for us, because the best teams only have the best players. And we're more than happy that someone's not the best player, then we can see the potential in someone. We'll put them on the right training course to get the right tickets, the right education, the right qualifications to suit us going forward to better our team.
Yeah, good, but it's which makes total sense. You know, in our business, when people join, they kind of have like a meet the founders thing where we talk to them, the new employee, about who we are, why we set up the business, what we're trying to do with the business, et cetera, et cetera. So that really, it sounds like we're in sync there. How do you then, it's now April, it's now July, it's October, like the months are going past, the years are going past. How do you continue to impress upon, and reflecting it back to your rugby memories as well, like, the season started in September, didn't it? It's now January. Are you updating those objectives, those visions? Like, how are you communicating that to your team? And then how do you do it, like, as a business?
Yeah, so, I mean, we have ongoing appraisals. So we will have a 6-monthly and a yearly appraisal where we sit down and go through where the company's at that point in time. This is where we are. This is what we're trying to achieve. This is where we currently sit. And then we understand and listen to them of where they want to be. Again, understand their progression, understand what training they want to do. If they tell us they want to be a project manager and they're currently on the tools, we say, well, look, that's great, because obviously as we get bigger and we expand, we're going to need the resources to do that. And I'd rather promote from within to understand, you know, we know we've got a good guy then, they know the company inside and out. We've got trust, which is a massive key factor, and we can build on that. So we understand where they want to go. We then implement a training program to help get them there, which then sets out the goals, the time frames, you know, a bit SWOT to understand and be strong in where we're going. So that will be done on a 6-monthly and a yearly basis, just to keep it updated. And then we do have sort of fun days. We've got a Christmas do coming up where we'll meet at our yard first. We'll go through where we've been for the year, you know, where we sat, what's coming in for the yearbook ahead, giving everyone the strength and understanding that, you know, job satisfaction and security is also a massive motivational factor. So letting the guys know, you know, we've got a good run up to Christmas. After Christmas, the order book's full for the next 6-7 months. So no one's sort of sitting there panicking, worrying about work in the new year. So they have a nice Christmas, relax, shut down, and come in the new year nice and refreshed.
Yeah, because I guess as a contracting business, particularly a specialist contracting business, that's my background as well as specialist contracting. That is always the worry, isn't it? Where's the order book? How are things, like, trying to build that certainty and security, as you say, in terms of employee retention? It must be absolutely crucial to your business. What has that communication of visions, goals, and objectives done for employee retention?
So to date, we've only ever lost 2 people. We only lost them. They were only short time. They came on for a short period, then left. But all our guys have been with me for sort of 20 years now. So the trust, the understanding between us all is phenomenal. But to lose someone would absolutely be detrimental to us as a team. The understanding we have for our business and the understanding they have and their expertise and qualification in their roles, you know, to go out and purchase that. I don't want to say I'll be paying twice as much these days, but we pay our guys right and they get the right amount. But knowing the business inside and out is key. So I would do anything I could to keep the man we have and make sure they've got the right wages, the right salary, the right benefits for them. We see people coming and going all the time. All the good people are obviously employed. Those that are looking, maybe not so. It's very hard. We've tried to take on a number of roles over the years, and the amount of people that sort of come in for 2 minutes and leave is purely because they're never going to be happy, I don't think.
And can I ask, reflecting on your own experience and reflecting on mine, where you felt held back, you felt almost like you couldn't quite achieve what you wanted to achieve being employed by someone, what advice would you give to other specialist contractors, main contractors listening, any contractor listening who wants to improve the company culture and particularly employee retention? I talked about the skill shortage that we have at the top of the show, which is absolutely prevalent and real. So if you are not thinking about this as a contracting business, I think you could be setting yourself up for quite a fall. So it's something that you clearly think about. And I don't, you won't want to give away all your secrets here, but you've been quite open and frank, right? But like, what honest advice would you give to anyone listening who wants to go about changing the culture of their business and improving employee retention?
Understanding your staff. You need to understand your team. If you don't understand your team, you can't understand how they work, what makes them work, and what motivates them. Like I said, no two people are the same. So whatever works for me motivationally isn't going to work for my construction manager or my labourer. Everyone's got different goals, different aspirations, and it's understanding that from a very early onset to getting the best out of your team. Once everyone's motivated and happy within their role, the team will naturally progress. They will always go above and beyond. Our team do. They always go above and beyond. It sort of swings around about. Some days they might work 4 hours longer, but they know if they get it all done by Friday, you can have half a day off and there'll be no questions. It's about having the trust that they will do that in the first place, because some companies will be ringing up saying, why are you leaving at 3 o'clock on a Friday? Well, so old time, I worked 4 hours on Thursday and you didn't ring up or care. So it's making sure they know you care, and not just become a number. When people become numbers, they lose interest, they lose love. And loving the company is a weird term, but without that, it's weird and to say that, but I feel like the family, it's like a family that we have, and there is love for the family and we all care for each other. And it's that sort of collaboration and relationship that helps drive this team forward.
And it's also, I guess, the fact that bond to the overall team and company vision comes from the fact that you know what the company vision is, you know why you're putting the effort in and where you're trying to get it to. And so often, so many companies don't explain that. That certainly was my experience with one of the companies that I worked for. I didn't know what I was doing, or I didn't know the greater good that I was trying to serve. I effectively just felt like a number because it was never, ever communicated to us. This is what we're doing. This is why we're doing it. And this is why you're a big part of it, which then goes, you know, tying it all back to the rugby team. If that was what was happening on a rugby team, you weren't being told why you were, but what the ambition of the club was, what you were wanted to achieve. Naturally, you're kind of just turning up and getting on with it, aren't you? Do you see what I mean?
Your culture is your game plan. If you go out and rugby pitch without a game plan and understanding what you're going to be doing in each area of the field, you know, if you're in your 22, you've got to kick it out, put it into them. If you're in the middle, make sure you run it up. When you're in there, half, really crunch down and be precise. Same as your business. You know, when we're at this job, we've got to do X, Y, Z. There's our program. This is what we've got to do to deliver it. These are the right people for the right job there. So we make sure we've got the right team acquisitions for that project to make sure we hit the deadlines and the quality of work we need. And any team's going to have a number of different individuals with different skill sets and qualities. And it's, like I said, it's understanding that team to make sure you've got the right team in the right place for the right job.
Fantastic. Well, look, it's been absolutely amazing talking to you. I think there's so much to digest and take away from that. I'm absolutely certain that people listening will be thinking about their own cultures, their own processes around team management and the like. But I will share your details, Fortis's details, in the show notes. Thank you for coming on the show, mate.
No, thank you very much. It's been a great experience and I really appreciate the opportunity.
No, the pleasure is all mine, mate. And I will leave Will's details, as I said, in the show notes. I'll also put a link to that ebook in the show notes. I will be back next week, guys. And until then, have a great week. Thank you very much.